When the art day gets rough, you just gotta keep on punching. And here's your Thunder Punch Daily with Jersey Drozd.
I'm going to start this one with a story that illustrates a couple of points for me about skills that get developed through being a teaching artist, providing that you show up with a certain degree of intention and mindfulness. I'm being careful to qualify that because this is something that gets leveled up and the degree changes through, you know, experience with contact with the ground and all that stuff. So anyway, the story. Here's the story. Several years ago, I was teaching my 8-week Comics Academy course at the Ann Arbor Art Center, and I had a room of middle schoolers. I want to say it was like 8 or 10 middle schoolers. And many of them had been taking my class for multiple years, were very comfortable around me. And I forget what time of year it was, but whatever was happening in their lives, they brought a lot of energy into the room that was kind of hard to manage. The classroom was, it was going from joyful and exuberant into disruptive and playfully disruptive. Like, I don't think they meant any harm, but they were clearly not on board with the idea of sitting down and drawing anything. They wanted to play. And I was trying to work with that energy. I always do try to work with it and try to not exude authority over them in the form of, all right, everybody, we've got to get to work. I don't want to call it work, not to get all Hank Scorpio about it. But, I mean, I want it to be something that they want to do. I want to bring them to it, get them excited, as excited about it as I am. In a non-combative, but like sort of like Aikido sort of sparring way, work with the energy. But it wasn't happening that day. It kept escalating. They were getting more, playfully confrontational. And I put my arm on my desk and I kind of slumped for a second and I went, oh. I let it show that they were wearing me down, you know. Now, I left class, and that just kept sticking with me. The fact that I did that sigh, I couldn't let it go. It was bugging me that I did that. And I talked about it with some friends, and I'm like, you know, I'm not comfortable with the idea of me ever letting a child know that they're getting on my nerves. Why is that, you know? Even though, I mean, like this, like in classroom management, there has to be parameters and so on. But the way I did it was bothering me, you know? And so I went to class the next week after talking about it with a number of trusted friends. And I started the class by saying, hey, listen up, everybody. You know, I don't really feel like I brought 100% of myself to this classroom. You know, last week I feel like I kind of, you know, gave you less than what you deserved in terms of my energy and my attention and my purpose. And I like to think that I always try to show up ready to give it my all. And I hope you all feel like you're ready to show up and give it your all. So today, let's make a commitment to just give it our all, okay? And then we went on with the day and we did our lesson. But weeks later, one of the students in that classroom told the story of that event again, in their words. And they said, yeah, we were just having a good time one week. And then the next week, Jersey came into the classroom and he was all falling all over himself going like, I'm so sorry that I made you so unhappy and I'm going to try to do my best. And I was like, that is a very different interpretation of what I remember happening, but so be it. You know, you're adding your relish to it, whatever. Now, why do I tell this story? One, I mean, it demonstrates this whole idea of like how I define what commitment is in terms of not making it about me. Like when I got tired that day, it was because I was making it about me. I was like, oh, you kids, you're wearing me out. You know, that's not why I'm there. I'm there to commit to the purpose of this shared experience with these young people. And there's a certain kind of, it's not unlike what they describe in meditation, is that the feeling happens. Yes, I get frustrated because I had an agenda today. And these students are just like trying to drive me in all sorts of different directions. And now I got to work double time to figure out what direction do they really need to go right now. Not where they want to go or what they're explicitly saying they want to go, but where their actions and behaviors are pointing towards. I got to do more investigation on the fly during the performance, which is taxing and exhausting. But that's not their problem. That's my job in that situation, right? So it's partially to describe that, but also what I'm describing is a form of listening. And when I think about that student who told back the story to me of what he experienced versus what I experienced in terms of that apology that I gave the students, it just goes to show that we're bringing our own interpretations to listening a lot of the time. We're bringing our own backstory, our own hangups, our own baggage to any conversation that we encounter, and it's not an easy thing to drop that on the floor and really be present and listen to somebody when they're talking to you. And I feel like that's part of that. That's a skill that is necessary for a teaching artist, but it's a skill that one can develop and improve, and is in the case of my story, it's a skill that you can get sloppy with from time to time. And it's something that I personally feel like I need to forgive myself more about when I'm in the classroom. Forgiving myself is different than letting myself off the hook, right? Like, forgiving myself is, yep, you're a human being. Okay, recommit, you know. But why is that an important skill? Like, okay, so these first art sound-offs are really about me trying to sell you on the idea of, like, why being a teaching artist has been valuable to me as a cartoonist. And boy, oh boy, do things change for you. Or, well, let me put it this way. Boy, oh boy, did things change for me when I started improving my listening skills. When I could sit across a table or across a crowded cocktail party room with other creators and really listen to what they're saying and let my own suppositions, my own brilliant retorts, my own counter arguments sort of sit in a bag for a minute. And don't be so eager to jump at and get them out there to show everybody how smart I am, but just sit and listen. Patiently listen to what they're saying. And then using the teaching artist's skill set of speaking back what they said in your own words to check understanding. Am I reading you right? Is this what you're saying? Blah, 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 blah. Can I just re-see what you said? It makes people feel listened to. It encourages faster rapport when you're doing networking. So my work as a teaching artist has made it a lot easier. Not supremely easy. I'm still an awkward human being, you know? I still don't find rapport with every person I meet. There are people I meet in my industry who I'm like, we will never share a meal together, but you know what? Bless you for being here. I'm so glad that you're here. To use language from a very good friend of mine, you know, have a nice day over there. So I don't immediately strike up rapport with everybody, but those who I can find rapport with, it happens a lot easier, partially because I've developed this skill of being able to sit and listen to somebody the way I do with my students. Because like I was describing with my rambunctious classroom, is what's happening, in my opinion, what's happening in that moment. This is my assessment. This is how I navigate my classroom, is when they start acting out, it's not necessarily what they say is making them act out. Oh, I gotta go to the bathroom. Again? Why are you trying to get out of here so many times? Is there something about this lesson that you're finding particularly challenging? And don't say it that way. Find another way to get at that, right? Get them to tell the story or get them to give you context that can help you come up with a heuristic conclusion about what's actually happening in the room. This is all like attention and listening. This is being very careful and patient with somebody and letting the awkward moment sit for a little bit. You don't have to solve every, you don't have to show up with a solution to every problem over and over again. Part of what makes the job so darn exciting for me is that moment of ambiguity of, I don't know how this is gonna go. I mean, and sometimes it goes off the rails and sometimes it turns into like at the end of the classroom, I'm saying like, boy, oh boy, was I just like a educational babysitter today? Did anybody get anything out of that? I'm sure they did. And not to point towards the rewards as being the central motivator, because this is an intrinsic motivation. This is something that I love doing for the sake of doing it without a whole lot of focus on that external reward. But one of the cool things that happens if you want to talk about external rewards, is these students come back into my life like a decade later. And then they are in college, they're in art school, and they come back and they say something about how their time in art school is easier because of something that happened between me and them in the classroom a decade ago. Or something I said or did, or something in the way that the culture of the classroom that I created helped prepare them for something else that they're encountering now that they're in college, which is immensely rewarding to know that like somebody's having a better time of this thing because they encountered me. Like, what a gift to be told that. So there's that too. But the main thing, the other extrinsic motivator or prize to think about is that engaging in this, not only are you creating like an alternate revenue stream for yourself by becoming a, you know, getting paid to teach what you love to other people, but that the practice of doing it will enhance your ability. If you show up mindful, if you show up with a real purpose and intent of being of service to somebody, just like drawing and drawing with the express intent of getting better, you do it enough times, it starts to improve. And it's the same thing with listening in the classroom. If you're really listening and you're really trying to understand, to like get the student to be motivated and on board with you and really meet them where they are and really try to understand what's going on with them in the moment, because you get so little data, right? So little information. I don't know this kid's life story or this teen's or this grown-up's life story for that matter. But really trying to listen to them and read all of the signals that they're giving you to try to come up with some kind of shared understanding of what's happening in the moment so that you can respond to that. Boy, does it make it easier for you to do person-to-person networking in real life. And it's sincere listening. You know, I'm not doing it like as a trick. I'm not doing it to like, oh, well, I'm using my, player mind to work the system. It's like the other thing that happens is you just become just like actually really interested in other people because we're all so profoundly quirky and weird and have so much to offer one another from our limited perspectives. So there's that too. Anyway, that was the whole thesis for today. It was just the whole role of listening and how we can color an experience with our own perspective and baggage if we don't show up and let our own perspective and baggage sit on the floor just for a minute. While we just like, again, like that Zen mindfulness, just let the thoughts roll over us, let the emotional reaction happen, and then put it down and keep on attending to what's happening in front of you. Okay, so this is part of the Art Sound Off Challenge, artsoundoff.com. Me and my buddy Rob challenging ourselves and everybody else to check in over the month of November with an audio essay of some sort about your art. I'm personally doing teaching art essays and trying to tie it into some kind of general sense of like how your work as an artist can improve through doing teaching arts as well. So I'll be back tomorrow with another Thunder Punch Daily. Until then, remember everybody.
In today's story, you saw how the Widgets were fooled by Evelyn's disguise. They learned that bad things can be made to look good and why we should always be careful and question everything that doesn't seem right. But it works both ways, and that's why the saying you can't judge a book by its cover is so important. What it means is that appearances can be deceiving, and you shouldn't judge books or people by the way they look. It's what's inside that really counts.